The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol, Craig Burley. Don's clearly run out of clean clothes. We saw the conclusion of Group B today. This was brilliant stuff. We'll take you through the game between Russia and Denmark first. Denmark going into this clash knowing they had to win it and hope that Belgium would beat Finland to guarantee second spot in the group. And it would be Damsgaard who would open the scoring.
Oh my goodness, what a way to score it as well. Cuts inside on his right foot. I mean, the goalkeeper knows he has no chance, doesn't even attempt to go for it. His ball gets it up, it comes dipping down under the crossbar and smashes into the back of the net.
So you don't blame the goalkeeper for that, but then what about this? Ooh. Goalkeeper left in no man's land, horrible back pass, Yusuf Poulsen makes it 2-0.
It's not even close as well, Dan. If you're going to play a back pass from there, you put it on the goalkeeper's left-hand side, safe side. It's horrendous, and he's never going to miss from there. See the goalkeeper as well?
He falls.
He has a little fumble, doesn't he? Trips over.
So Denmark in control, as they had been pretty much throughout the match. However, Russia awarded a penalty with 20 minutes to go, Craig.
Yeah, and the referee's in a good position, actually, and I don't think it was a penalty at all. There's hardly any contact. He throws himself to the ground. VAR doesn't overturn it because of this clear and obvious nonsense. But it is clear and obvious that it's clear and obvious the referee's made a mistake,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, it didn't affect the outcome in the end, but it might have done.
No, as you say, he would step up, would score the penalty.
Decent pen, down the middle. I think Schmeichel thought he was going to his left-hand side, but just down the middle, safe.
But then what a response from Denmark. 10 minutes later, the ball ping around everywhere. Finally falls to Christensen. How nice is this hit, Stevie?
I'll tell you what, he's never going to hit a shot as crisp, as accurate, wow, and as powerful as that in the rest of his career.
Keeper?
It's just gone far too fast for him to react. Goes through some bodies, just too much pace on it.
And then the 3 points were sealed on the counter-attack. Denmark making it 4-1.
Yeah, you're sort of seeing this coming a mile off, the way they were backing off. As soon as he chops inside on his right foot, clever finish. See it coming a mile off, but a brilliant performance from the Danes.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Beating Russia convincingly then by 4-1. That victory, though, wouldn't have mattered if Finland avoided defeat against Belgium. And for quite a lot of the game, it maybe looked like that was the way it was going to play out. Belgium had so many chances, but in the end, it was an own goal that broke the deadlock with 16 minutes to go.
Well, you could say this was fortunate, but the truth is, it felt at the time it was a matter of time before Belgium scored. Certainly didn't think it would come in that manner.
And then Lukaku would seal the deal, Don.
Yeah, he scored one about 10 minutes earlier as well, but he was just offside. He rolls a defender. The one thing you can't do with Lukaku is try and fight him and get too tight.
So it finishes then Belgium 2, Finland 0. That is a perfect record for Roberto Martinez's side. 3 games, 3 victories. And it's interesting you take a look at the group. Despite the fact that Denmark only registered 1 victory, the better goal difference means that they are second. They advance to the knockout stages. And I think everyone, Craig, who wasn't Russian would have been happy, wouldn't they? With this result, it was kind of like considering everything that's happened with Christian Eriksen, this is when they found out that they had advanced.
I mean, forget about the Finland game, because that was a nonsense off the back of a near-death scenario. But the way Denmark played in both the games after that, even in defeat against Belgium, they were excellent. You know what I mean? It's like, only because Kevin De Bruyne come on and Eden Hazard come on and Martinez made all these changes. But Denmark were brilliant, 22 efforts on goal, and when it really mattered here, they've got the job done. And listen, certain teams might have folded once the penalty was given. I don't think it was a penalty at all, and that clear and obvious rhetoric needs to be taken out of the law because it's a nonsense. It's just an out for officials. Because there was no contact, but it didn't make a difference. Christensen, fantastic goal. And I'm glad they're going through for all the reasons that we've talked about for over a week. But one of them is, they're actually not a bad team.
No.
And they're a better team than Russia. They're a better team than Finland. So out of this group, I'm pleased to see them go through.
And that's it, isn't it, Donya? We wondered how they would react after the Eriksen episode.
Yeah.
Boy, have they impressed.
It would have been easy for them to fold because of the emotion, because all the players, obviously the fans, the staff, everyone, especially Christian Eriksen, had to go through. But they responded well, and Dalsgaard's got his chance because he probably wouldn't have been playing. Christian Eriksen would have been playing his position. So, you know, he's just looks an unbelievable player, scores a great goal. And the way they went on, I think, during this game, especially in the second half, as Craig said, they look a real good side. They've got good individuals that we know about and play right across Europe. And Christian Eriksen, who is obviously not playing, watching on, and you see Andreas Christensen there taking a shot on. And as Stevie said, that's as sweet as they come. It's drilled, little three iron. Goalkeeper, I wonder if he could have done a little bit better. But still, they performed at a really high level when it must have been so hard.
You have to think, though, surrounding the whole Eriksen story, it almost looks on the field of play as though it's loosened them all up. Because before this tournament, you think of Denmark, you think straight away Christian Eriksen, and then, well, they're going to try and keep it tight all the time and try and get a set piece, or maybe Eriksen with a little bit of magic. The Belgium game and this game, they've been playing some great football.
It's been carefree, hasn't it?
Well, exactly. And this definitely has freed them up because they can't lose. Doesn't matter what the result is, they can't lose. The Danish fans, whatever happens, don't care. They're just happy. They just want to enjoy themselves. So it's freed them up to play good football, and they're benefiting.
It's not just Eriksen going out the side that Kasper Hjulmand had to make a change, which he had, but he also changed both games. He changed the shape of the team, primarily because one man was out.
Yeah.
Every time I've watched Denmark in the last two or three years, they've played with a back four. And in the last two games, he played with the three centre-backs. And it's worked well for him. He's been able to fit players in. And they look... Sometimes when, you know, we didn't want an incident like we saw, but sometimes when something happens and a coach has to make a change, he sort of stumbles on something. And I think they've stumbled on a shape with those three centre-backs that are big and strong, with Simon Kjær in the middle. And it's worked well for them. But honestly, they're a decent side, and they could, on one... I don't think they'll come close to winning.
No one wants to play them, though, do they?
No, I think on any given day, you know, on a 90 minutes, they could upset one of the bigger boys.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
They're against Wales next.
I mean, listen, the Danes, as Stevie said, you don't want to play against them because everything's a sort of free hit for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they can play with emotion. If they get knocked out, everyone's going to say, well... they've done amazing to get where they were. In the Wales game now, I would imagine that's going to be tight. But when I've watched people like Vestergaard and Christensen over the years, they are better in a three. They get exposed as a two. Christensen's a better centre-half when he plays at Chelsea in a three. So they've got, you know, as Craig said, they've stumbled across that, but they're a good outfit. They're a hard-working outfit, and I think the better going forward than people give them credit for.
They're a better side than Wales.
Yeah, I think so. I think they were going to its favourites.
I hope Coleman's not watching this.
I hope they don't do what Don said and go tight.
Yeah, you just got to keep playing.
It'll be a horrible game because the Welsh are not going to go and open up and play. So I hope the Danes don't think the same thing.
I think it's a close one.
Let's just keep it tight.
What have you seen from Wales that makes it close?
No, I think
Wales have been... Oh, well, steady on.
What?
Wales have been decent.
Yeah. They've been all right.
I mean...
they've been fine compared to what we've seen from Denmark, as you say.
So Wales against was it Switzerland?
Yeah,
Wales against Switzerland.
Right, that was a horrible game. And I thought Wales against Turkey... I mean, all right, Turkey were appalling. Right, in this competition.
Yeah.
But Wales still dismantled them with players that are, you know, it's Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, and then where did all the pegs fall? Right?
Yeah.
Good, solid, decent, solid players. But I think they've actually looked, I mean, they created a lot of chances in that game. I think Wales have looked okay.
All right, we've got a lot more time to talk about Wales later on in the week, haven't we?
Well, just because you said Wales are not very good and somebody's disagreed with you.
No, I didn't say Wales were not very good.
Well,
I said Denmark were favourites.
You said, what have you seen from Wales? And I think Wales have been okay. Don?
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
OK. Speaking of past mistakes, Lukaku, Stevie, another goal, 2-0 victory. You continue to slate him, yet here he is.
All right, Flipper.
Told you, I've told you 1,000 times.
What?
He scores against Finland.
Let's see him
scoring a goal that really matters in a big time game.
Winning the title.
I'll tell you what. Let me see him scoring a goal in a big time game.
63
goals in all competitions for Belgium.
You're going to have to let this go.
No, I'm not.
You've got to swallow this. You're going to have to swallow your pride.
Hold on a second. Why did Inter Milan not get out and get the Champions League?
Wow.
You can't blame that on Lukaku.
Hold on a second. Listen, let me tell you something.
You are clutching.
You know what? When you're the supposed top man, when you're the man that's supposed to score the goals when it really matters, because that's why you get a lot of money and that's why you get all the praise, and you get an opportunity to put your team through with virtually the last kick of the ball in the Champions League group, and you don't score.
How about the title?
You're not going to bother. You're going to show, yeah, but he's got 1,000 goals
in
Serie A.
How about the title for the first one in like 12 years or something for Inter? No good?
Isn't that amazing how he's just completely forgotten that they couldn't get out a champion? So wait a minute.
You're talking about four or five games in the group stage.
That any decent team can stutter out of.
So what you're saying is that Inter Milan won the league despite having Lukaku, and Inter Milan went out of the Champions League because of Lukaku.
How many games in a group stage? Six games in a group stage.
Listen, he doesn't. Look, he's doing what he needs to do.
When you Belgium, hold on a second. Belgium last World Cup.
Oh my goodness.
He had chances as well in the big game.
I've got to let it go.
He had chances in the big game. What did he do? Guess what he does? He hits it straight at the goalie most of the time.
Belgium, of course, thought they'd open the scoring. Goal was ruled offside just on.
Just.
And I know this is something, one of your bugbears. Are you okay with this?
No, it's not a bugbear.
Well, you said they shouldn't use lines and should use your eyes.
Well, exactly, and your eyes will tell you that he was offside. Look, he's offside.
Where do your eyes?
His left foot.
When we were watching this, you went, he's onside.
You liar. I said in real time, I went, that's offside. You liar. Pinocchio there, I said he's
pardon.
Offside.
No.
What, is your memory going? I said he's offside.
You said he was onside.
I said
he was onside, didn't he?
Off. Dan, back me up. What did
you say? You said it was tight, didn't you?
No. Don't sit on the fence. What did I say?
Honestly, I thought you said he was off.
No,
he was on.
Honestly, I said off. Tight, but
I beg
off.
Your pardon.
Okay, let's take a look at the bracket, which is just taking shape slightly now. As we mentioned before, obviously, Wales will be in action against Denmark. Denmark, huge favourites going into that game. Meanwhile...
Have you got odds for that? I thought you were making that up. Yeah.
Italy, meanwhile, taking on Austria as well. That's how things stand, of course, from those earlier matches. And Belgium will win. I don't even know what that means. Group A, D, E, F. So whoever plays third place in one of those groups.
Let's just talk Italy-Austria.
Yeah, they're getting the third place in one of those.
Yeah, good.
Group F.
There we go.
Who cares?
Were you going to try and attempt to read that?
No.
So I suppose what we're looking at the bracket is that it could be Belgium against Italy in the quarterfinals. No disrespect to Austria or whoever finished third place in any of those groups.
Well, Belgium,
that's a proper game. Mm. This is where somebody says something about that possible matchup.
Well, I don't know who they're playing.
If it's Belgium against Italy, I've just said, in the quarterfinals.
When we watch Belgium, right, we're kind of waiting on somebody doing something.
Lukaku.
We're waiting on De Bruyne or Lukaku
Hazard.
We're kind of waiting on somebody doing something. Whereas Italy's really a team. They're kind of flowing.
Right.
And
so right now you take Italy?
Against Belgium, yes, I would.
Really?
Yes.
Good thing is, Hazard got minutes, De Bruyne got minutes and Vittel got minutes.
Yep.
So, are you against Stevie? You don't think that Italy would be favourites?
I don't know. I think when you watch Belgium, you go, I don't think they're great at the back.
Right.
I don't. I think Vertonghen's as slow as he's been. I don't really rate Denayer, even though he's had a decent season.
Alderweireld's
not had a great season. I think that's their weakness, the three centre-backs.
So, you would take Italy right now?
I don't know, Dan. I think when you watch Belgium... No, to answer your question, they're one of them. They toss the coin and you go, defensively poor, but if the front men turn it on...
Right.
They can beat anyone in the competition.
So,
they can beat anyone on their day.
So, you're taking Belgium?
I've just told you.
A toss of a coin is an analysis, is it?
Well, it is because I don't know if Hazard's going to play. I don't know if De Bruyne is going to play. I don't know if Stevie's man Lukaku's going to play.
Well, of course he's going to play. Why isn't he?
Is Hazard going to play the form that he's in? Is Witzel the best midfielder?
I don't know why we're nitpicking here. From what you've seen from Italy so far this campaign and Belgium so far this tournament, if they meet in the quarterfinals, for you, who is going to win?
Belgium.
Right, goodness gracious me.
I think Belgium had the biggest test in the Denmark game.
Yes.
Denmark, and I think they've had a bigger test than Italy so far. Italy's group has been relatively comfortable for them. They've been good, and they've been good for a couple of years. And they are a team rather than, you know, one individual sort of superstar. But the way Belgium comes through that test from Denmark, where Denmark come out with the passion and the drive off the back of that incident and pummeled them for a good 45 minutes, and then they just made the changes. And I think that could be the difference between those two teams, that little bit of quality. They're both not great at the back. I mean, if you know, Italy don't have a lot of pace in that back line, particularly in the middle too. So I'm just edging towards Belgium at the moment. And they're under the most pressure. I mean, Mancini will be under pressure. Of course, as a manager of Italy, you're always under pressure. But they're back in a major tournament after missing the World Cup. They're not one of the favourites to win it, although we all think they're decent. Whereas Roberto Martinez, it's kind of, this is it, isn't it? This is it. These guys are late 20s, 30s. They've got to do it now.
Is it not cool just to say, this is going to be tight, I don't know who's going to win?
Why does
everyone think like people are the oracle on football? Because like the definitive answer.
Because otherwise we just sit here saying nothing, Don.
Because
we all just sit here going, well, anyone can win, who's going to turn up, who's in the starting 11?
Frank's more or less just said the same thing.
No, I didn't. I said Belgium.
No, he said Belgium.
Yeah, in the end...
Oh, I apologise.
No, but you're not... What, are you going to put your house on it then?
So it will be... Not Italy, well then...
Roll the other game while he gets off the fence.
Let's show you exactly how Austria booked a place in the knockout stages. I think many thought this was just going to be a draw. Both teams would go through the motions. But in the end, Austria deserving the win. Baumgartner getting the only goal of the game, Stevie.
Yeah, and it's not even really a chance. He just... It's a bit of desire. Gets in front of his defender and pokes it home with the bottom of his foot, really.
Ukraine were terrible throughout pretty much most of this match.
Yeah.
Austria thoroughly deserving of the victory. They then through to the knockout stages, beating Ukraine by 1-0. Meanwhile, North Macedonia taking on the Netherlands. The Dutch, of course, already through going into this tie. North Macedonia looking for their first points 9 minutes into this one. Bukowski with the goal, but it's called offside, Stevie.
Yeah, and again, it's just the big toe, maybe even a foot, but the right decision.
And then, once again, a chance for North Macedonia, this time denied by the post.
They were decent, you know, they started really well. Every decision early on in the game went against them. This is the big one. I thought Pandev was fouled there, and they break away. This guy was incredible, Marlon. He was... The pace that he's got, and Depay played as a sort of number 10 just off him, and Gina Van Aalen was getting forward. But they were brilliant, Holland. I mean, you can say it was against North Macedonia. You can throw that at them. They were really, really good and sharp, but Marlon was the difference. But that there's the talking point. Referee didn't give it. He didn't give anything to North Macedonia early on.
If only they had, like, a VAR system. Go back and look.
Into the second half, Wijnaldum, close-range finish, Craig, to make it 2-0.
Goals from the middle of the park, it's what he's done. Holland will be hoping him and Frankie de Jong will get forward to support when they get to the real big games.
And this is nice little build-up play, keep him with the save. Wijnaldum making it 3-0.
Well, I thought the goalkeeper could have done better, but Wijnaldum doing exactly what he's supposed to, following in for any scraps and then putting it home.
Best I've seen Depay play.
So, Dutch perfect so far in the tournament, then beating North Macedonia by 3-0. This is what Wijnaldum had to say after the match.
Gini, congratulations, the start of the match, another 2 goals. How does it feel?
Well, it always feels great to be star of the match or man of the match, but if I'm honest, I think Frankie or Memphis deserved it more than me, but you know how it is with football. If you score 2 goals and you win 3-0, obviously they will give you a man of the match or star of the match. But in my opinion, I think what I just said before, like Memphis and Frankie, they were unbelievable today. I think if they had man of the match, it would be deserved.
Very, very nice of you to say so. But you've scored so many goals now for the national team from midfield. I mean, what's the secret?
I think the secret is just be in the right places. As you see today, there were 2 easy goals. But you have to stand in the places where the ball will come. So I think that's the thing what I did today. I scored a goal. So I think that's a quality to be on the right spot and at the right time.
The team changed formation at half-time. You went from 5-3-2 to 4-3-3, but the chances kept coming, and it seems like you're just as comfortable in both systems.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, in the second half, if you are 1-0 up, the opponent will give more spaces because they have to go for a goal, have to try to equalize. So obviously, when you play a game like that and the opponent want to win also, spaces will come. So that's what happened in the second half. We played the same game we played in the first half, but with four defenders instead of five. And we created the chances we did in the first half also, but now we scored a goal. So I think because they trying to attack and to score the goals, we had more spaces and it was easier for us to create chances.
Yeah, yeah. A final question, 3 victories out of 3. I mean, you couldn't have dreamt for anything better before this tournament started, right?
I think, you know, that was the thing that we wanted to do, to win all the games in the group. And yeah, if it happens, you're really glad, because if you look at the other groups, it's so difficult nowadays to win games easy. And also for us, we have to do a lot to win those games, and that's what we did. So it is a good feeling if you win 3 games.
So let's just confirm how Group C finishes. The Dutch, of course, top of those 3 victories. Austria through to the knockout stages. Ukraine, North Macedonia going home early. So taking a look at the other side of the bracket then. Wales against Denmark. The winner of that tie will then meet the Dutch. Let's welcome in, shall we? Julien Laurent to the show, who was very critical of Frank de Boer going into this tournament. And he has very much proved you wrong so far, Jules.
Yeah, he has. They've won. I mean, I still don't think he's a good manager, but certainly the 3-5-2 has worked for them. I'm not sure how much you can take away from beating those opponents and the way those opponents played. And especially, the Ukraine game, they got that third goal late. It could have been 2-2, and maybe the rest would have been a bit different. But certainly, the momentum that they have now, the confidence, I'm glad that he changed it at halftime today. And I still think that, and we saw it in the second half tonight, that the 4-3-3 is far more suited and far better for this squad of player. And it's not just on this show, it's not just us who've been debating these three at the back. Even back in Holland, I heard Rafael van der Vaart the other day saying that they should not even broadcast the game, because this is not the Dutch mentality, this is not the Dutch football education to play three at the back, and that it's a disgrace that they play like this. So the ball is very much in his own bubble right now, and things are working. I'm waiting to see against better opposition if that 3-5-2 still works, but so far, he deserves some credit for having 3 wins in 3.
Yeah. Craig, everyone was sharpening the knives, ready to have a go at him, but his team have performed.
Well, that's just stupid, you know, this, you know, ex-Dutch players saying we shouldn't be broadcasting because they're playing 3 at the back. I mean, some of the best teams around have played 3 at the back.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what way you play. But listen, people are getting carried away with this group stage, all these group stages, apart from the Germany, France, Portugal, Hungary group, mm-hmm. right? All these big other teams, don't even talk to me about them, really, until they get to the knockout stages, right? You know, the Dutch are looking... Yeah, they're looking good against the teams they're playing against.
Right.
But you know, most of these sides would be an absolute disaster for them if they didn't get out the group. I mean, almost everybody's getting out the group these days. Everybody's getting a medal. People with 3 points getting in second place. 3 points is still getting you through, potentially, as one of the best third place teams. Mm. I mean, so this tournament doesn't, apart from that group that I mentioned, this tournament does not really start, and whether we like it or not, till the elite countries start playing each other. Then we judge them. I mean, if they go out in the knockout stages, that's not a good Euros for Holland.
Right.
So I think we need to temper it a little bit. Who have teams played against? Yes, they're getting the job done. But really and truly, we know this doesn't start until they're really in the mix with the big boys.
I think the unfortunate thing for Netherlands is it's everybody outside the Netherlands that's getting excited. And it doesn't matter what they do, they're getting caned all over the place. They've got 9 points from 9 games.
3 games.
Three games, beg your pardon. I mean, what more do you want? But yet, you've got every man and his dog in Holland criticising the manager, the way they're playing, the players. My goodness.
You'd think they had a squad with Hullet and Van Basten and Rijkaard and right. All these great players.
They
I mean,
don't.
They're decent players. I mean, they've got... They're decent
I think they're a good side.
I think they're a very good side. The problem is, if you're going to play Daley Blind, you've got to play De Ligt and De Vrij.
You think Holland are a really good side?
I do. I think they are. There's not many better midfields than Gino van Alderman and De Jong in the middle of the park. De Vrij's just won the Scudetto. De Ligt, an unbelievably good centre-half. That's the problem if you play Dumfries, who's probably been the right wing-back of the tournament so far.
Won't you be going to Amsterdam anytime?
Listen, I think they're a dangerous side.
They're a good side.
Well, let you in.
I'm just glad you're finally off the fence with a team.
I think that is a dangerous side.
I mean, you're our man in the match at the moment.
Thank you. I think that's a dangerous side.
Just a reminder, the boys stay late to answer your tweets on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. Yesterday was all about Needham story time.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, as we focus on Tuesday, of course, still all to play for in Group D, England taking on Czech Republic. Meanwhile, it's Croatia against Scotland. The big talking point, of course, around England is Billy Gilmour testing positive for COVID. Why that influences England? Well, Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell have been self-isolating. They will not be available for the Czech Republic game as we welcome in Alexis Nunes. Alexis, this all sounds rather confusing. Billy Gilmour, a Scottish player. The Scottish team don't have to self-isolate, but two English players who played against Gilmour do.
Yeah, Dan, it's actually a very confusing one that as we keep hearing more information coming out, I just got another piece of information. It's just making me scratch my head even more because the lowdown is, of course, Billy Gilmour tested positive for coronavirus this morning and the Scotland camp told Public Health England, and then they had then asked him about close contacts within the Scotland camp, which you would think pretty much everybody. It's his teammates, right? But they determined he had no close contacts there. So then they decided to start discussions about anyone externally, and that's when he identified, or it was identified, that he did have close contact with Mason Mount and, of course, Ben Chilwell. In the tunnel, they had some conversations, probably a hug after. Everybody knows that they're close from being teammates at Chelsea in the Premier League. So that is what happened then. And after they were identified, it was the English FA that pretty much recommended that both of the players isolate. We will see Gareth Southgate in his press conference didn't 100% rule them out for the game tomorrow. He did say that there are ongoing conversations and investigations behind the scenes, and that we will know more in about 12 hours. I suspect probably early tomorrow morning we'll find out if they do indeed or can indeed play. But it is one that's pretty weird because you would think he would have close contacts in his own team camp. But no, instead it's affected England.
Yeah, so who's been cited that will replace Mount then, Alexis, if indeed he doesn't play?
Well, that's the next question. And then now, of course, with the news that England have qualified for the round of 16 after Belgium's win and whatnot, we are hearing, or we are speculating again exactly what Gareth Southgate's team or starting 11 is going to look like. But now everyone's been crying out for Jadon Sancho. However, what we have heard is that he's definitely more likely to go with the likes of Jack Grealish again. Gareth Southgate has recently been talking about how he does go with players that have a bit more experience. And if we're talking about experience in this tournament, well, we saw Jack Grealish did come off the bench last time out against Scotland. And even though he didn't have the impact that I guess the world wanted him to have, he did, you know, excite things for a little bit against Scotland. As for Jadon Sancho, it just doesn't seem like he can catch a break. You know, Southgate keeps talking about this inexperience. But now that, you know, I suppose there's some pressure off, maybe we will see Gareth Southgate just let all guns blaze and play probably both of them. I know that's exactly what everyone has been screaming for, because it's weird after the first match against Croatia, there was such a buzz in the city. And over the last 2 days, it's weirdly been very quiet, very pessimistic once again. The press has absolutely gone after Gareth Southgate. It's almost like the wind has been taken out of the England sails for this one. So I'm sure, or I'm hoping, that we probably do get to see some Jadon Sancho or Jack Grealish just to get some of this excitement back here.
Alexis Nunes, as always, thank you very much. Where should we start on this, boy, Greg?
Well, I'll tell you where we'll start. Well, first and foremost, I mean, Jadon Sancho must be knocking on Southgate's door saying,
Have you seen the first two games?
Yeah.
You know, and secondly, I can't get my head around this at all. That Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell are the players that allegedly contact sometime during the game or after. Was he not in the dressing room, Billy Gilmour, after the game in Scotland? Did he not get changed next to his teammates? Did he not have the showers and then get back on the bus?
I think there's been a picture of I think Mount, especially, hugging him after the game.
The Scotland team were dancing as a group together after the game in the dressing room.
Bizarre.
If you have a result like that in a current Scotland set-up, you're congratulating yourself in the congratulating your teammates in the dressing room. You know, you're high-fiving and shaking hands and your little hugs and all that. Trust me. So, and then you're on the bus, and then you go back. Is he rooming on his own, or are they sharing?
Maybe it's the pitcher that's done it. No, Chilwell and Mount have both gone to Billy Gilmour after the game and they've put an arm around him. Maybe that's forced something. But Craig's right. They're going to be high-fiving each other. They're going to be in showers after the game. It just seems a little bit far-fetched.
Andy Robertson apparently posted a picture playing ping pong with Billy Gilmour and then quickly took it down. I mean, I don't want anybody to miss games. And, for people that are in the US here, they can't get their head around this. Most of them thinking, why are all these people not vaccinated already?
Yeah.
It's because they're so far behind in some of the countries in Europe that these players are not vaccinated. And so this is an issue. But I'm not having it that he was not in closer contact with his teammates post-game than he was with his pals from Chelsea. Not having it at all.
Away from COVID, let's focus on the game, Stevie. Jadon Sancho. There seems to be more and more of people wanting to see him play. Obviously, wasn't in the squad for the first match, didn't feature in the second. Brilliant for Dortmund in the second half of the season. What's going on?
Well, I think I'll go back to what Craig started with. Has Gary Southgate not been watching what's been going on with the England team? Jadon Sancho absolutely should be starting for England in this game. He should have started in the previous game.
Right.
I think actually Sterling shouldn't be starting either. Sterling's had two chances.
Sure.
Yes, he scored a goal, but overall he hasn't been good. You've got Rashford there. Get Rashford in. Yes, get Grealish in.
Okay.
Now, if you're England, surely you want to go and win this game. That should be the object.
You've got to win it.
As well. So if you're going to go and win it, how about you get players on the field that want to attack, want to go forward?
Mm.
And I wouldn't play two defensive midfielders either.
Right.
I think it's fine playing them in the first two games, get yourself through, and then you can start opening up and playing.
England beat them
but
5.
But it looks like they're not going to do that.
England beat them 5 a couple of months back. Just go and play.
Don, if Jadon Sancho played for Aston Villa, would he feature?
It just shouldn't matter. He's just ripped it up in Germany. He's ripped it up at one of the best teams in
But he can't get near this team
That's because the manager's conservative. You know, if you've got choices, you've got so many choices. You know, if Sterling's missing, if he's injured, suspended, you could put Jack Grealish on the left-hand side, you can pull Phil Foden in off the right side and play him as number 10, you then get Jadon Sancho in. It's an embarrassment to riches.
12 months ago,
Gareth shouldn't be in the scenario where he didn't even make the matchday squad.
12 months ago, Sterling was an absolute nailed-on starter and probably most teams, any country that he would, if he was playing for. But he's not been playing well. And the fact he played in the Champions League final was a huge surprise as well.
Yeah.
And hasn't played well. So he's got no consistency in his game. Yes, as Stevie said, he got the goal and you can't take that away, but there's a bigger picture. And I'm not sure. There's a question mark at the moment whether Gareth Southgate actually knows, one, what his best 11 is, and two, when it comes to the crunch, knows exactly the changes he needs to make.
Because, does he trust him?
Because we can talk about the World Cup semi-final all we like, right? There's no getting away from it. It's a good story, but it was an easy-ish pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And England didn't have to play brilliantly. This Euros, I think, is stronger.
Right.
Because we're seeing, we saw Portugal dismantled by Germany, who said, yeah, right is off. We've seen France already. We've seen Belgium. So this is a strong Euros when it gets to the elite teams. And England are going to have to, and Southgate are going to have to be way, way better than they've been. And he can't, listen, you said, would he play if he was playing at the top of his game in England? As a manager, He can't make. He cannot pick a team like that because the press and the punters, the public will kill him.
Yeah.
He has to pick a team that thinks it's going to be exciting, it's going to win, and it's going to have success. And I don't think that's the current England 11.
Is there a better three when you look at all the big teams in the competition? If he went with, you know, on the right hand side, let's say, just say went Jadon Sancho, Jack Grealish, and Phil Foden. I don't think there's a better three than that. Harry Kane in front of them. It seems blindingly obvious to me. I don't know why you can't see that.
You know the other thing? The other thing, we've been praising Italy and we've been praising the way they've played.
Yes.
But we're praising Mancini about the way he has kept the whole group on their toes. He's kept them all together.
Yeah.
After two games of seeing the same old, the players are probably thinking, I think maybe he's going to try something here.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, he's going to lose players.
Really?
I think so, particularly Sanchez. Because he's obviously now has to be sitting thinking, how do I get a game in this team?
Right.
And so the longer it goes, then, OK, he's going to turn up for training. He's probably not going to be at his best because he thinks he's not playing.
Right.
So you just go through the motions.
It's a vicious circle.
So if you end up with a number of players who are just going through the motions, then it's not a huge thing.
Right.
But it's just something that's missing that the Italians have.
I don't know
already.
If it matters, but Italia 90, Mancini was in the squad, didn't play a single minute in that tournament. So the rumours are he's trying to get as many players playing as possible. Goalkeeper comes off the bench for 2 minutes to try and force some sort of team spirit. Stevie's right. At some point, you've got to start giving these kids minutes.
This is a heavy criticism of England, but that's, I think, because of the players he's got at his disposal. Certainly in the attacking third.
Yes.
So I think we're right. And I think it was telling the England fans, those that were at Wembley, booed the performance against Scotland. But people talk about Harry Kane, or they've been talking about him in the first couple of games. Ah, he doesn't look... Well, how's it been a bit more incisive?
Yeah.
To side, is it back to this fullback, back again? You know, he must be up front going, come on.
Yeah, where's the service?
Yeah, it's got a bit more service, got a bit more sharpness, and we're passing, play some 1-2s, get it wide, get it in the box. There was none of that against Scotland. He's going to have to find that, and maybe he'll say, well, we're building up to it and all that sort of... all that manager speak. I can see the trajectory.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We're full off.
A 1-0 win is not going to do it for
him. Let's take a look at your prediction. Well, a win's a win, Don, to be
no,
fair.
No, a 1-0 win
I
will do
know,
nothing
man.
For
I
England.
I think as it stands, it I won't. Think a win would they would take. Just taking a look, obviously, Scotland as well needing a result to get through to the knockout stages. Don, you're going for a Scotland win.
Got to.
Why?
Because I think it'll be tight.
You know, Scotland are the only team in the tournament that hasn't scored the goal.
I know.
That takes us to you, Craig. Still the last player to score for Scotland in an international tournament.
And still...
Croatia can't hit a barn door.
There's Donaldson when you need them.
Croatia can't score, so it'll be tight in a Scotland 1-0 win.
Right, OK. Stevie, you're a lot more pessimistic.
Seen it before. Seen it too many times.
What have you gone, Stevie?
Stevie went 2-0
Croatia.
Oh, I saw that wrong. I thought you'd gone 2-0 Scotland.
No. No, and I'll tell you exactly how it'll play out. Croatia will score first. We're going to have to try and get forward.
Right.
And then they'll get one on the break and the game will be over at 2-0.
Beautiful.
Well, what I tell you what, there's no point in turning up. There's
seen it too many times.
Craig, what do you say, 0-0?
Yeah, they've been...
Just because you want that record still.
No, because they're not the only team that haven't scored. They're not the best at the back, Croatia, these days. But I don't know. I could see a 0-0 here and glorious failure once more. I might be wrong, but that's how I see it.
Just a reminder, of course, those games are available on ESPN and ESPN2. Czech Republic taking on England, Croatia against Scotland. Those matches kick off tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, just catch you up with some news. Thomas Muller set to miss the match against Hungary with a knee injury. Doubtful, some reports are saying, for the round of 16 as well. Meanwhile, Dembele out for the remainder of the Euros with apparent knee injury from France. Çalhanoğlu set to go to Inter on a free transfer from AC Milan. Speaking of transfers, Jules, reports in England today that Manchester City have put in a £100 million bid Harry Kane.
That's right, Dan. Although Spurs are telling us that they haven't received yet anything from City, and that even if they receive this offer, they will not accept it and they will not sell Harry Kane. Full stop. Not for that money, but not for any kind of offers. We knew this was coming. Let's remind everyone that a year ago already, last summer, City tried, certainly made contact with Harry Kane's entourage, Charlie Kane, who is his brother and also his agent now, representing his brother. So Chicky Bergeration and Charlie Kane know each other well. We knew that was coming at some point. We know that City are going to try. They might not succeed. Harry Kane might not end up at City this summer. However, they're going to try. And this is the first step. You have to start somewhere. Maybe 100 million is too far from the valuation that Spurs have made. But if you include a lot of bonuses and add-ons, in regards with potential trophies, goals, games, whatever you want to do, or even put another player in the mix with that money, Gabriel Jesus or Raheem Sterling or whoever, everybody else that City are ready to offload to Spurs, maybe that you can start the ball rolling, and certainly that first offer would be that in the mind of Chicky Bergeration and people at City.
Sorry, Jules, just to pick you up on that name, are we in a situation where seriously Manchester City are looking maybe to off Raheem Sterling?
Yeah, I mean, Raheem Sterling has 2 years left on his contract. I believe the negotiation of a new deal have not started yet, whereas he wanted them to have been started already. So maybe that's a sign that City will be looking maybe at offering him as a cash plus player style of deal with Spurs. I'm not sure if he would accept. I'm not sure if Spurs can pay his wages or are happy to pay his wages either. So this is a long way. It's a long way to happen anyway. We know how difficult those deals are, because how much is Raheem Sterling worth? Does he want to go there? Do Spurs even want him in the first place? So those are always difficult. But I think the idea from City was like, okay, we give you 100 million for sure, and we can add another 20, 30 maybe of add-on depending on the results and etc. But maybe also pick a player from the squad, and then we'll see if we're ready to let him go to you in exchange with Harry Kane. That could be Sterling. They could well ask for, I don't know, Benjamin Mendy or whoever they want, Nathan Aiki, Emerick Laporte, whatever they want, and then City will have to decide if it's a good deal for them as well to include that player that Spurs will pick first. But certainly I think they would not be against including a player with the money that they're ready to pay for Harry Kane.
And we'll have Kevin De Bruyne, please.
Carrier pigeon. City are going old school. That's where the offer's coming.
That's what it is.
It's coming. It's just a build-up. But yeah. I think that probably would work better for Spurs, that if they could get player in cash.
Yes.
But it would depend, as Joe said. I mean, it's difficult to get players to move. Sometimes they just...
Right.
I mean, a player can scupper it. You can just go, no, I'm not going.
Right.
Raheem Sterling, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I don't think he goes there.
So what would get you going if you were Spurs? £100 million and in terms of players.
Well, I think the fee that
realistically,
I think the fee that Spurs want is 120.
Okay.
So now you've got to try and figure out which players will end up at Tottenham.
Right.
Maybe Kyle Walker, he still lives in the area.
Okay.
Which are Cancelo then playing at right back. I've read reports of Bernardo Silva maybe going to Atletico Madrid, £50 million. So there's enough money you would have thought in that City squad, as Jules said, with people like Nathan Aki and Laporte, etc. There's enough money there, I think, if you're Man City, you could easily raise without even trying about 75 million quid. And then you've got to pay, what, close to 50 for Harry Kane? It's a no-brainer.
How much of a role will Harry Kane have in all of this, Stevie?
Listen, I think he's made it pretty clear, to be honest. He wants out. So, regardless of what Levy's saying, he is going to be chapping the door, or he should be chapping the door, as soon as these Euros are done, and just make his point and say, look, I don't want to be here.
Right.
There's nothing you can do or say to make me stay. Just make your point. And then after that, that's all he can do.
Yeah.
After that, it's out of his hands. But he has to keep banging the door and saying, I want to go.
He gave them the extra year, didn't he? Because Man City were in this position this time last year.
Right.
And then Levy was clever by getting Jose Mourinho in, who tried to convince Harry Kane, stay for one more year, I'll win you a trophy, then move on. We know how that worked. So it's inevitable.
Meanwhile, continuing our transfer talk, Jules. Sergio Ramos, of course, a free agent. Suggestions are that his first pick is Manchester United.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I don't think he's received concrete offers yet, but certainly René, his brother, similar to the Kane family, will be out there offering him, waiting for calls. There will be some agent playing the intermediaries as well and trying to bring some offers on the table. He's on a free, we know that, but he wants a two-year deal at his age. This is not a given. We saw with Thiago Silva, similar age, when he left PSG to go to Chelsea. It was a 1+1 deal. We saw it with Cavani, similar age, leaving PSG to United. It was a 1+1 deal as well. I'm not sure Sergio Ramos right now can demand a two straightforward year deal, but maybe we're happy with 1+1. I don't know. With big wages, of course, we're talking around the 12 to 15 million euros a year, which is a lot of money, again, considering his age. However, if a club like United, and we know they're looking for a centre-back, are interested, again, that worked with Cavani. We saw it working with Thiago Silva. It can work again with Sergio Ramos, no doubt. If he can prove that his fitness is right, because, again, four league games in 2021 with Real Madrid is not enough if you're ready to invest that kind of money on someone like him. So he will have to prove his fitness first. But then I think a club like United should be interested, certainly, in Sergio Ramos.
Just a reminder of how the Premier League table finished at the end of last season. Manchester United, 12 points off Manchester City. Say they get Jadon Sancho and Sergio Ramos, Craig. Does that close the gap?
Well, I'd expect Liverpool to be fighting with Man City as well. So, I mean, potentially closes the gap. But as you say, you're asking me if that closed the gap to City, who might go out and buy Harry Kane.
Mm.
So where does that gap go when they get Harry Kane? Because they played all season almost without a striker.
Sure.
So I'm not sure. I mean, it helps. What I don't understand is United banged the drum for a while about we're going in a different direction, younger players. And then they signed Cavani short term, and we believe they're looking at Sergio Ramos. So
yeah.
It seems to me that they change direction the same way the wind changes direction. I'll go back. I'm not even going to mention the reason I don't think they'll win the league, because I think everybody knows what it is, and it's not actually on the field. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. They need to do something, put it that way. United need to make a statement, because Liverpool and City are not going away.
Right.
And Chelsea.
Yes,
again. Chelsea might go again.
Yeah.
Because Tuchel goes to the board and says, that wasn't a bad 3 or 4 months in charge or whatever it was. Give me the backing, excuse me, and I will put a major challenge in across all competition.
Yeah.
So United don't make a statement, that'll be another year of disappointment.
Doesn't seem a fit to me.
No?
Ramos at Man United.
Why not?
I don't think he's got the pace anymore. I think you add him with Harry Maguire, it still makes them weak. Because
he's an improvement on, say, Lindelof, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but Lindelof's quicker. So you look at Man United on the pitch, and there's no doubt in who's the icon and who's been the best player over the last 10, 15 years, obviously Sergio Ramos. But you start to pair him up with Harry Maguire and you think, that's a slow centre-half partnership. Where yesterday they were linked with Rafa Varane. You think that's a fit.
Right.
Jadon Sancho, for sure.
That fits the criteria.
Yeah. You see for
Varane,
sure.
His age.
You see for sure United's plan going forward where it's blindingly obvious where you bring Jadon Sancho in, you've got Mason Greenwood on the right-hand side. In a year's time when Cavani's finished, he then moves to be their number nine. You can see the pathway for Mason Greenwood to be the number nine. Learn off Cavani over 18 months. At the back, I think if you bring Ramos in, I'm not even sure it's a short-term fix. I think it will look good. It's going to cost an awful lot of money, as Jules said there. If he's wanting 2 years, are you going to get the very best of Sergio Ramos for 2 years? I think you get more out of Rafa Varane.
Jules, has Varane to United got any legs?
Yeah, I think Varane is certainly, I agree with the boys, is the better option. I think if you get Sergio Ramos and you bring the experience and you bring that kind of leadership, for me, you need another centre-back almost. If you're ready to bring Sergio Ramos in, someone like Varane, you can play back three then if you want. You can, you can have Sergio Ramos almost as a backup then, but you need more pace, certainly. And I think Varane would be perfect. 1 year left on his contract, Real Madrid will have to sell him because he's not renewing his deal. That's for sure. And I think he's always been attracted to the Premier League. I'm not saying that he's going to say yes to United straight away. However, the Premier League, more than going back home to France, for example, more than going to Italy, there's no way he's going to go to another Spanish club. So the Premier League has to be where he's looking at right now. And I think at 28 years old, with the career that he's had and the form that he's shown, well, not so much against Hungary, but very much against Germany in these Euros, I think you go for him, certainly. And he won't cost you even the world, because with 1 year left on his contract, you can get him for a really decent price.
I'm actually shocked that Ramos is linked with Man United and Man City. And for all the reasons that Don said, but Manchester City, are you serious? The only way that teams generally will catch Manchester City is on the break, where they've got space to run at the back line. If you want to guarantee teams to score against you on the break, stick Sergio Ramos at the back then. Because he can't deal anymore one-on-one with a bit of pace. So it makes no sense. I don't understand why any of these
leverage.
Two teams...
It's got to be leverage.
Why is any
Lukaku
two
tick,
teams interested?
Sergio Ramos
and that's
tick.
Why. And that's why leverage. It's leverage from Sergio Ramos' agents to go, do you know what? Who can we get to buy us? Well, I'll tell you what, let's get Man City and Man United.
And that's why City was
because
so
he'll end up at PSG.
And that's why City was so good this year at the back, domestically, because they had the pace and the power of Ruben Dias.
And Stones.
It's just
Stones
a move. It's just a move from
John Stones is no slouch, and Stevie still hates Sergio Ramos. Let's hope he goes to Liverpool. Then he's going to have to love him.
Thank you very much, Jules, as always, for keeping us to date with all those all the latest transfer news. For more from Jules, you can listen to the latest edition of the Gab.
Oh, no, Jules can listen to Gab.
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. Oh, Gavin's got his shorts on today. Oh, disappointment. Yeah. You can listen to that now.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hey, well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Stevie, Don and Craig answering some of your questions. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig, you've gone for the two buttons undone, eh?
Yep.
Whoa. Inspired by Don's casual ways.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's going to go jacket. He's got a hoodie on. Yeah. I mean, the first few days he was here, he was suited and booted, looked like yes. That, trying to impress. Then there's been a downward spiral.
Attitude as well. Yeah. It's matched.
Well, I've realised the standard of the programme.
Wow.
So I was on the ball to start with, dressed up, analysis. Yes. Now it's like, oh, just set the fence.
Yeah.
Toss a coin. Don't ask me who's going to win the game, and I'm going to wear a hoodie, by the way.
That's
it. Yeah, not be back.
Okay.
You buckled and took your blazer off.
At least I've got a shirt on.
Okay.
I'll have a medallion coming out.
Oh, yes.
For hair.
That'd be beautiful.
A medallion.
Hairy medallion action. I don't have the question, so I have to read them off the screen. So if you can put the first one up, that would be marvellous.
It's only a small detail.
Yeah. There it is. Mm. Is it coming home to Brussels?
Ooh.
What do you think, Don?
I don't ask Don. Who's going to win, Belgium or...
No.
Belgium or
Italy? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they can go deep, but I'm sticking with France.
Really?
I am.
They won 3 out of 3?
I know.
Yeah.
But I think once they get deep and play the big teams, I think the best teams like France might turn them over.
Belgium, Stevie?
No, I'm with Don on the back line. Don't think they're good enough. Don't have enough pace. I think that'll be their downfall.
Craig, why are the referees refereeing club matches and international matches differently? It is more enjoyable to watch the game without breaks in the Euros, while referees blow whistles to every contact by players in league games.
Well, I think there was a small tweak for the Euros in particular, certainly a change in the handball, which we saw in match day one. And I think referees are now allowing a little bit more contact in the game to flow.
Yeah.
It's
working, isn't it?
It's better. Right. And so players throwing themselves to the floor, where in most domestic leagues during the season, you're getting free kicks willy-nilly, the referees in the main seem to be letting these things go. Finally using common sense.
Yeah.
It's working.
That you hope this will set the standard going forward.
Yeah, well, interesting thing is nobody on the field of play has actually complained about it either.
Yeah.
And they've 100% accepted the way this tournament's being refereed.
Do you know what I'm lacking, Dan?
Let's just hope.
What are you lacking, Don?
No, liking.
I'm liking.
I'm liking how we see a potential offside, we trust the VAR team, they just carry on playing the game, then they show us one angle in about 4 minutes' time, instead of drawing the lines on,
yeah,
taking too
but
much
to
time.
To be fair, it's only the Premier League that have done that.
Yeah, no, but I seem to trust this method a little bit more. I like it. I think it's good.
It's
I think it helps the flow of the game.
It's the same method, though, isn't it? You don't see the intricacies of it.
What's a different method then?
No, it's the same one. No, if I was to show you a picture, it's still the same picture, even if you don't see me drawing it.
Yes, but I think it's better. I think when you're watching the Euros, you see something and you go, oh, that's tight. You don't see any lines being drawn.
Mm-hmm.
The referee then goes, yeah, he's offside. Then about 4 minutes later, when they've had a chance, they put the lines and you go, oh,
yep.
Yeah, I trust them.
But that's the same as the Premier League. It's just in the Premier League, you see them doing all the lines and like working it out.
So it's different then.
It's
different then. Premier League,
no,
they
not.
Go offside.
No, you're not.
No, they are. In the Premier League, they go offside. Like Serie A, they go offside.
Don't bring me in.
Hey, lines.
Don't be bringing me in.
It's different.
Don't bring me into this.
No, it's different. In Serie A, you watch the lines being drawn. We're not seeing that, so it's different.
Don't fight with a man wearing a hoodie.
Should England play for a draw to avoid France, Germany or Portugal, Stevie?
No.
Do managers plan to play for a draw if that gives their team an easier next round game?
You can't play for a draw. That makes no sense whatsoever.
There was a pundit yesterday.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
There was a pundit a couple of days ago in England, before Scottish,
right,
before the England-Scotland game, said, being Scottish, I'd take a 1-0 defeat now.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
Oh, is that?
Not going to out him.
You can.
Ridiculous.
You can play a little bit more conservative.
Right.
But you don't play to draw.
Okay. All right then. So, Don.
Was that not that scenario in the World Cup?
It was the Belgium.
The best one ever has got to be Austria, Germany, isn't it?
Yeah.
The World
70s?
Cup.
Well,
nobody crossed the halfway line.
So, Don, take us through the pattern of preparation that players and staff go through before a game, especially when the margins are so tight, as it is for Scotland and Croatia.
What does that mean? What does that even mean, the pattern of preparation?
Well, just how do you prepare for a game?
Wake up
that
the morning.
So
analysis before the game starts.
You know, he's building up. His time here
angry.
In the US is coming towards. It's petering out, and it's petering out with a lot of anger.
Yeah,
I
want to stay.
Unnecessary anger.
I want to stay, Craig.
Well, we don't
want to get my suit back on. You've got Frank LeBeouf to deal with for 2 weeks.
The feeling is not mutual.
Who's rather with this attitude?
It's only 2 weeks ago he was going round and outside the hotel taking photos of stop signs.
I know. Now he's
who's rather? me or Frank? 2 weeks.
Oh, it's a tough one. You never shut up during the game.
Stop
I didn't. He's winding you up.
I was with you when you took it.
No, I didn't.
You took a picture of the stop sign on the street.
No, I didn't.
You did. I was there.
I took a picture of the ESPN sign.
We were walking to my house and you took a picture of the stop sign in the street.
Oh, that wasn't the stop sign. That was a picture from a girlfriend.
Right.
To get an idea what the American houses were like.
Ah.
There's a stop sign there.
It's American houses.
Why would take a picture of a stop sign?
What, they've got roofs?
Oh, it's different, isn't
got
it?
Roofs and their walls.
Different to the UK.
Got grass.
No, it was nice. It was a nice
glass window.
Nice American street.
Some of them even got doorbells.
It was a nice American street with restaurants and houses.
Inside right. Those houses, there are TVs, beds, there's a kitchen.
Basements.
Right.
What's the difference between that?
Right. Take us through the preparation. How are you feeling as a player going to bed tonight in the morning? Can you eat breakfast?
Yeah.
How much do you read the newspapers? What do you
papers?
Do?
Papers? No. Preparation beforehand before you even
who
think
reads
about the game.
Papers? No.
No. That's true. Analysis yeah. Guys. Analysis guys and managers would take you through who you're playing against. If you're playing, who you're playing against, what's his strengths, what's his weaknesses.
Right.
If you're a fullback and you're playing against a winger who likes to come inside, don't show him inside, send him on his weaker foot, that sort of thing. But
nobody ever took me aside and said...
No, but you know, but yeah, you know, you don't, this is a modern day player. We didn't tell right, him because right. we used to watch the games.
So you're talking about the day of the game, the morning of the game?
No. Nights before.
Okay.
Remember, Bruno used to do it, Scotland games. We used to go nights before games and watch analysis on the teams that we're playing against.
I never watched it. I just switched off at the back of the room.
Yeah, you'd be
standard. I know who I'm playing against. I know how he plays.
That's what I'm saying. We do.
Yeah.
But the modern-day player needs as much information as they can get, but they don't watch games like we did. Remember Alan Pardew was at West Ham?
Yes.
He came to the back of the coach and he gave me a dossier. Not just me, he gave every player a dossier. 6 or 7 pages. Everyone like that. And I was watching all the young boys, reading them, and they were blindingly obvious. If you're playing against David Beckham, you know he's right-footed.
Okay.
You know he's not cutting inside onto his left foot. That simple information, same as Giggsy on the other side. You don't watch football.
Give me that bit of paper,
you don't watch football, you need this. But if you watch football, you don't need it.
Right, here you go. I'm giving... This is your dossier. How to dress for a TV show. There you go, there's your dossier.
Okay.
Look at the back of it, it says don't wear a...
Stevie, once a match starts, how much can the manager do to impact play? Is it just down to the players to execute at that point? Managers always get blamed for tactics, but is it sometimes correct tactics and the players not getting the job done?
Well, the difference between when I played and when you can play now, certainly when I started, is that there was only one sub. And so, pretty much, you had to get your team spot on.
Right.
Ready. Knowing what they're doing. And generally, because there's only one sub, you would back what you've told your players, how to go about the game. You would back them all the way to the end of the game. Now, the fact that you can use 5 subs completely changes the whole complexion. You know, coaches at the... Somebody just needs to get in the rear from up the stairs who's been analysing all kinds of nonsense, graphs, you name it, touches, and all of a sudden you'll change from 4 at the back to 3 at the back to 4 in the middle.
Right.
I mean, just there's so much scope now and there's so much pressure on coaches now that if they don't do anything, then they're seen as well, they're not doing the job.
Okay. Sitting on their hands.
You know, you never see anybody now trusting the team they've picked, the way they've gone about things to get the job done. Now it's, well, if you don't do anything, you don't know what you're doing.
Didn't you get your tactics right every week at the New England Revolution?
Every week.
Pretty much, most of the time.
Oh. Very serious answer.
What did you want me to say?
Did they execute?
I was trying to get it back to one sub when I was coaching the
so does anyone
just sit and watch again.
Does anyone have any famous football contacts on their phone? Who have you got, Don? Who would you say the most famous is?
What do you mean, managers?
Just anyone in the football world, who would you say is the most
famous? Loads, you've all got loads. John Barnes,
right?
Redknapp,
right?
Lampard, Morris.
Oh, Lampard.
David Moyes.
Right.
Oh, phone's managers now.
But you have them. You have them over the years.
David. You seem to have hung up.
What about you, Greg?
Signed Zakaria.
Ravinelli.
For 5 years.
It's pretty good.
Ravinelli, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive, Stevie. Huh.
Jimmy Starr.
Yeah. Signed Locatelli, David. I've told
Kenny.
You for 3 years.
Yeah, Kenny. All the old boys.
Yeah, the old boys.
Final question. Have Craig and Stevie introduced Don to Golf Course Bear yet?
No, he doesn't want to come.
He's custard piders.
He said, wait for it. He said, we'll be another time.
If he has his way, the last time I've ever come.
No, he doesn't.
I've not got time.
In the morning. He said he hasn't got the time.
Well,
he doesn't come in here till. He doesn't start till.
Dan picks me up at 2.
This show goes live at 5 p.m.
Yeah, we tee off at 8 in the morning.
Ah, but I like a bit of breakfast. You don't realise what I'm like putting up with. You don't realise what I'm putting up with every night with Matt Manaman.
You get breakfast at the golf club.
Craft.
You get breakfast at the golf club.
You don't realise what
I'm putting up with. You can get a shower, bring your gear, get a shower after you finish.
I've got Matt Manaman.
And then we'll take you straight to the studio.
I've got Matt Manaman.
You'll actually be here from 1:30.
I've got Matt Manaman and Coleman to deal with every night. Not easy.
If Steve can get to the golf course at 8.
Well, you think me then? Just do it every day in the gym.
What?
Do you think we were in the gym every night?
No, but you're not sinking as many as Matt Manaman and Coleman.
Well, you don't have to drink like that.
Yeah. I'll be showing a bit of discipline.
That is it before we go down a rabbit hole. ESPN FC is back on your screens tomorrow, reflecting on both the England and Scottish games. We're live at 5 on ESPN+.